Chapter 78. Wherein is shown how the Artful Dodger got into trouble, and so it was you that was your own friend, was it? Asked Mr. Claypole, otherwise Bolter, when, by virtue of the compact entered into between them, he had removed next day to Fagin's house. Cod, I thought as much last night. Every man's his own friend, my dear, replied Fagin, with his most insinuating grin. He hasn't as good a one as himself anywhere. Replied Morris Bolter, assuming the air of a man of the world. Some people are nobody's enemies but their own, yer no. Don't believe that, said Fagin. When a man's his own enemy, it's only because he's too much his own friend, not because he's careful for everybody but himself. Pooh. Pooh. There ain't such a thing in nature. There ain't to be, if there is, replied Mr. Bolter. That stands to reason. Some conjurers say that number 3 is the magic number, and some say number 7. It's neither, my friend, neither. It's number 1. Ha, ha! Cried Mr. Bolter. Number 1 forever. In a little community like ours, my dear, said Fagin, who felt it necessary to qualify this position, we have a general number 1, without considering me 2 as the same, and all the other young people. Oh, the devil! Exclaimed Mr. Bolter. You see, pursued Fagin, affecting to disregard this interruption, we are so mixed up together, and identified in our interests, that it must be so. For instance, it's your object to take care of number 1, meaning yourself. Certainly, replied Mr. Bolter. You're about right there. Well, you can't take care of yourself, number 1, without taking care of me, number 1. Number 2, you mean, said Mr. Bolter, who was largely endowed with the quality of selfishness. No, I don't. Retorted Fagin. I'm of the same importance to you, as you are to yourself. Interrupted Mr. Bolter. You're a very nice man, and I'm very fond of yer, but we ain't quite so thick together, as all that comes to. Said Fagin, shrugging his shoulders, and stretching out his hands. Only consider. You've done what's a very pretty thing, and what I love you for doing, but what at the same time, would put the cravat round your throat, that's so very easily tied, and so very difficult to unloose in plain English, the halter. Mr. Bolter put his hand to his neckerchief, as if he felt it inconveniently tight, and murmured an assent, qualified in tone, but not in substance. The gallows, continued Fagin, the gallows, my dear, is an ugly finger post, which points out a very short and sharp turning that has stopped many a bold fellow's career on the broad highway. To keep in the easy road, and keep it at a distance, is object number 1 with you. Of course it is, replied Mr. Bolter. What do you talk about such things for? Only to show you my meaning clearly, said the Jew, raising his eyebrows. To be able to do that, you depend upon me. To keep my little business all snug, I depend upon you. The first is your number 1, the second my number 1. The more you value your number 1, the more careful you must be of mine. So we come at last to what I told you at first, that a regard for number 1 holds us all together, and must do so, unless we would all go to pieces in company. That's true, rejoined Mr. Bolter, thoughtfully. Oh, you're a cunning old codger. Mr. Fagin saw, with delight, that this tribute to his powers was no mere compliment, but that he had really impressed his recruit with a sense of his wily genius, which it was most important that he should entertain in the outset of their acquaintance. to strengthen an impression so desirable and useful, he followed up the blow by acquainting him, in some detail, with the magnitude and extent of his operations, blending truth and fiction together, as best served his purpose, and bringing both to bear, with so much art, that Mr. Bolter's respect visibly increased, and became tempered, at the same time, with a degree of wholesome fear, which it was highly desirable to awaken. It's this mutual trust we have in each other that consoles me under heavy losses, apostrophe said Fagin. My best hand was taken from me, yesterday morning. Apostrophe, you don't mean to say he died? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Bolter. No, no, apostrophe, replied Fagin, not so bad as that. Not quite so bad. Apostrophe, what, I suppose he was apostrophe, wanted, apostrophe, interposed Fagin. Yes, he was wanted. Apostrophe, very particular? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Bolter. No, apostrophe, replied Fagin, not very. He was charged with attempting to pick a pocket, and they found a silver snuff box on him, his own, my dear, his own, for he took snuff himself, and was very fond of it. They remanded him till today, for they thought they knew the owner. Ah! He was worth 50 boxes, and I'd give the price of as many to have him back. You should have known the dodger, my dear, you should have known the dodger. Apostrophe, well, but I shall know him, I hope. Don't ye think so? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Bolter. I'm doubtful about it, apostrophe, replied Fagin, with a sigh. If they don't get any fresh evidence, it'll only be a summary conviction, and we shall have him back again after 6 weeks or so. But, if they do, it's a case of lagging. They know what a clever lad he is. He'll be a lifer. They'll make the artful nothing less than a lifer. Apostrophe, what do you mean, by lagging and a lifer? Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Mr. Bolter. What's the good of talking in that way to me? Why don't ye speak so as I can understand ye? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Fagin was about to translate these mysterious expressions into the vulgar tongue, and, being interpreted, Mr. Bolter would have been informed that they represented that combination of words, transportation for life, apostrophe, when the dialogue was cut short by the entry of Master Bates, with his hands in his breeches pockets, and his face twisted into a look of semi-comical woe. It's all up, Fagin, apostrophe, said Charlie, when he and his new companion had been made known to each other. What do you mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, they found the gentleman as owns the box, two or three more's a-coming to identify him, and the artful's booked for a passage out, apostrophe, replied Master Bates. I must have a full suit of mourning, Fagin, and a hatband, to whisk him in, afore he sets out upon his travels. To think of Jack Dawkins' Lummy Jack the Dodger, the artful Dodger, going abroad for a common twopenny halfpenny sneeze box. I never thought he'd a done it under a gold watch, chain, and seals, at the lowest. Oh, why didn't he rob some rich old gentleman of all his valuables, and go out as a gentleman, and not like a common prig, without no honor nor glory? Apostrophe, apostrophe, with this expression of feeling for his unfortunate friend, Master Bates sat himself on the nearest chair with an aspect of chagrin and despondency. What do you talk about his having neither honor nor glory for? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Fagin, darting an angry look at his pupil. Wasn't he always the top sawyer among you all? Is there one of you that could touch him, or come near him on any scent? Eh? Apostrophe, not one, apostrophe, replied Master Bates, in a voice rendered husky by regret, not one. Apostrophe, then what do you talk of? Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied Fagin angrily, what are you blubbering for? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cause it isn't on the record, is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Charlie, chafed into perfect defiance of his venerable friend by the current of his regrets, cause it can't come out in the dictment, cause nobody will never know half of what he was. How will he stand in the Newgate calendar? Perhaps not be there at all. Oh, my eye, what a blow it is. Apostrophe apostrophe, ha, ha. Apostrophe cried Fagin, extending his right hand, and turning to Mr. Bolter in a fit of chuckling which shook him, as though he had the palsy. See what a pride they take in their profession, my dear. Ain't it beautiful? Apostrophe, Mr. Bolter nodded assent, and Fagin, after contemplating the grief of Charlie Bates for some seconds with evident satisfaction, stepped up to that young gentleman, and patted him on the shoulder. Never mind, Charlie, apostrophe said Fagin soothingly. It'll come out, it'll be sure to come out. They'll all know what a clever fellow he was. He'll show it himself, and not disgrace his old pals and teachers. Think how young he is too. What a distinction, Charlie, to be lagged at his time of life. Apostrophe apostrophe, well, it is a honor that is. Apostrophe apostrophe said Charlie, a little consoled. He shall have all he wants, apostrophe continued the Jew. He shall be kept in the stone jug, Charlie, like a gentleman. Like a gentleman. With his beer every day, and money in his pocket, to pitch and toss with, if he can't spend it. Apostrophe, no, shall he though? Apostrophe apostrophe cried Charlie Bates. Eh, that he shall, apostrophe replied Fagin, and we'll have a big wig, Charlie. One that's got the greatest gift of the gab. To carry on his defense, and he shall make a speech for himself too, if he likes. And we'll read it all in the papers. Artful Dodger shrieks of laughter here the court was convulsed. Eh, Charlie, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe, ha, ha. Laugh Master Bates, what a lark that would be, wouldn't it, Fagin? I say, how the artful would bother him, wouldn't he? Apostrophe apostrophe, would. Apostrophe apostrophe cried Fagin. He shall he will. Apostrophe, ah, to be sure, so he will, apostrophe repeated Charlie, rubbing his hands. I think I see him now, apostrophe cried the Jew, bending his eyes upon his pupil. So do I, apostrophe cried Charlie Bates. Ha, 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 so do one. I see it all afore me, upon my soul I do, Fagin. What a game, what a regular game. All the big wigs trying to look solemn, and Jack Dawkins addressing of them as intimate and comfortable, as if he was the judge's own son making a speech after dinner. Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe apostrophe, in fact, Mr. Fagin had so well humored his young friend's eccentric disposition, that Master Bates, who had at first been disposed to consider the imprisoned Dodger rather in the light of a victim, now looked upon him as the chief actor in a scene of most uncommon and exquisite humor, and felt quite impatient for the arrival of the time when his old companion should have so favorable an opportunity of displaying his abilities. We must know how he gets on today, by some handy means or other, apostrophe said Fagin. Let me think. Apostrophe, shall I go? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Charlie. Not for the world, apostrophe replied Fagin. Are you mad, my dear, stark mad, that you'd walk into the very place where no, Charlie, no. One is enough to lose at a time. Apostrophe, you don't mean to go yourself, I suppose? Apostrophe apostrophe said Charlie with a humorous leer. That wouldn't quite fit, apostrophe replied Fagin shaking his head. Then why don't you send this new cove? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Master Bates, laying his hand on Noah's arm. Nobody knows him. Apostrophe, why, if he didn't mind apostrophe observed Fagin. Mind? Apostrophe apostrophe interposed Charlie. What should he have to mind? Apostrophe, really nothing, my dear, apostrophe said Fagin, turning to Mr. Bolter, really nothing. Apostrophe, oh, I dare say about that, yeah no, apostrophe observed Noah, backing towards the door, and shaking his head with a kind of sober alarm. No, no none of that. It's not in my department, that ain't. Apostrophe, what department has he got, Fagin? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired Master Bates, surveying Noah's lank form with much disgust. the cutting away when there's anything wrong, and the eating all the whittles when there's everything right. Is that his branch? Never mind, retorted Mr. Bolter. And don't yer take liberties with yer superiors, little boy, or yer'll find yerself in the wrong shop. Master Bates laughed so vehemently at this magnificent threat that it was some time before Fagin could interpose and represent to Mr. Bolter that he incurred no possible danger in visiting the police office, that, inasmuch as no account of the little affair in which he had engaged, nor any description of his person, had yet been forwarded to the metropolis, it was very probable that he was not even suspected of having resorted to it for shelter, and that, if he were properly disguised, it would be as safe a spot for him to visit as any in London, inasmuch as it would be, of all places, the very last to which he could be supposed likely to resort of his own free will. Persuaded, in part, by these representations, but overborne in a much greater degree by his fear of Fagin, Mr. Bolter at length consented, with a very bad grace, to undertake the expedition. By Fagin's directions, he immediately substituted for his own attire a wagoner's frock, velveteen breeches, and leather leggings, all of which articles the Jew had at hand. He was likewise furnished with a felt hat well garnished with turnpike tickets, and a carter's whip. Thus equipped, he was to saunter into the office, as some country fellow from Covent Garden Market might be supposed to do for the gratification of his curiosity. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.